Kyle, I've got the solution to our dreary, dreary evenings. We can we can pop a little magic mind and get a little pick me up and still go to sleep, just enough to give us some clarity of mind, a little creativity, get the creative juices flowing, maybe give you one or two before the podcast, you know, to really focus you in. What do you think of that?
Asleep during one podcast and all of a sudden that's your problem. But yeah, absolutely. The worst thing you want to do is, you know, brew a pot of coffee at middle of the night right before a podcast.
Yeah.
Then you're up the entire evening. What you need is good, sustained energy, clarity of mind, not, you know, a jolt of caffeine that hurts your body and all these things. Absolutely. And Magic Mind does all that stuff and has that. Okay. Matcha. I want to talk about matcha, Drew.
Okay. All right.
The green vegetable matcha, that buzzword, that superfood. I didn't think I'd like matcha. I am starting to like matcha. And that's one of the big key ingredients here is that lovely green superfood that has the benefits of all the keeping you going.
Yeah. And it's cool stuff. It's pricey. Matcha is. But they stick it in this with some great other ingredients, all natural stuff. But you can get it through us with our code. So we want you to check out this Magic Mind Elixir. Check this out. It is go to magicmind.co/comicsfunprofit.
And elixir really is the perfect word for it. It's a nice little elixir. It's very cool.
For sure. If you feel you want to try this out, go to magicmind.co/comicsfunprofit and use our code. You can get 20% off of an initial one-time purchase or up to 56% off of a subscription. So if this sounds good to you, go to magicmind.co/comicsfunprofit and use our code CFP. You can get up to 56% off your subscription for the next 10 days with the code CFP. Or you can just use that discount code, CFP, at magicmind.co/comicsfunprofit to get 20% off a one-time purchase. Just a sample, dip your toe, check it out.
Aloha, it's Jason from Hawaii. Welcome to a special edition of the Comics for Fun and Profit podcast. In this episode, I will be interviewing a friend of the podcast. She is a Hugo and Eisner nominated New York best-selling author, Karina Becko. You know, and also she from time to time is a guest on the Fanbase Weekly podcast. It's a podcast that has guest panels that discuss things that's in the world of pop culture, ranging from movies to TV/streaming shows. Karina was just recently on an episode discussing the Ahsoka TV series. You can check out that podcast that was dated on October 9th, 2023. And more importantly, and I still have to check this out, Karina, you guys did the Jurassic Park 30th anniversary panel discussion. That was dated on June 9th of this year, 2023.
And you know I loved that one because my day job is in paleontology, so I had a lot to say on that.
I'm sorry, I'm going to go off the cuff here. You have to come to Kauai. You have to go and visit.
I would love to do that. That is on my bucket list. Oh, I've been dying to see those areas in person.
And I think, there's that big scene. They filmed it here on Oahu, on Kualoa Ranch. The one, I can't think of the dinosaurs that were running around with them. They were running in that.
Yes, when they were running past. And it's the Paralophus? Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, you have to visit Kualoa Ranch. They'll give you the whole tour of where they shot everything. Anyway, all right.
Gotta make that happen.
Yes. She is here to promote her latest work, The Space Between from Boom Studios. It is a four-part limited series. The first issue comes out November 1st, and the second issue comes out on December 6th. Karina, welcome back to the Comics for Fun and Profit podcast. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, thank you very much. And mahalo nui loa. Thank you very much in Hawaiian. Thank you very much for asking me to interview you to promote your latest series. And thank you for the advanced copies.
Thank you very much. I'm so proud of this book, and I'm really happy that you agreed to read it and seem to enjoy it. So
thank you very much. Now, listeners, I'm just going to go over some of her past works. Corina, please feel free to jump in, add anything. You know, she wrote the miniseries Avatar Adapt or Die that came out, I believe it was last year.
Gosh, I think, well, the graphic novel was last year. The series was year before. Gosh, time flies.
I know, that's what I was trying to figure out.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yes. She's also written a miniseries on The Expanse. She's written Heathentown, and she's also written, I know this is a book, The Smithsonian Digit. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Smithsonian Digit Dinosaurs, in fact, speaking of. Mm-hmm. And that was a book for young readers. That was just about, I co-wrote that with my friend Brenda Scott Royce, and it's all about dinosaurs, and it comes with a little block where you can dig up your own tiny fossil. So for young readers in your life.
That is so cool. So is there anything you want to add or anything that I missed?
Oh, yeah, I guess in addition, I can go ahead and say co-wrote Invisible Republic for Image with Gabriel Hardman, mm-hmm. and Green Lantern Earth One. There are two volumes of that, and a lot of other licensed stuff, like some Once Upon a Time, mm-hmm. and things like that. Sorry, I have a little cough, so.
Oh, no.
Still a little tickle. I'm getting over a bug, so I do apologize for that.
No problem. And like you said, that you're feeling a lot better.
Oh, so much better. It's just annoying. You know, living in LA, the air here isn't that great either. So it takes a while to get rid of these things.
Mm-hmm.
I bet it's much better in Hawaii, where you actually have those island breezes.
Yes. But we do still have the cold that if someone has it and it goes on. Yes. Anyway, we're not going to do that. Okay. I'm going to move on. Listeners, I got some of my information from a couple recent interviews Corina did. One of them is the fan press interview Corina Becco on the upcoming release of the sci-fi comic book series The Space Between with Boom Studios. Now, that article is dated on September 13th, 2023. Also, to another article that I read, actually, it's on the Boom Studio website, Take 10, The Space Between. Now, listeners, if you get a chance, please check out those great interviews. Please check out those interviews. All right. So, Corina, where can listeners follow you on social media?
My name is fairly unique, so I just go by that everywhere. So now that everything's so, I know that the former Twitter, may it rest in peace, is now rebranded. I'm there sometimes, but I'm mostly all over the place, other places too, Blue Sky, Spoutable, Facebook, Instagram, I'm a lot, but every place, Corina Becco, just my name at wherever you happen to get your social media.
All right. I'm going to just jump right in.
Please do.
The Space Between. What is the story about?
You know, it really is about hope. And I feel no one would launch a generation ship, which is what the entire run of this is set upon, a generation ship. Mm-hmm. And it's called The Space Between because it's going one place to another, which you would think is this interstitial space that a lot of times people only care about the destination or where you left from. But in this case, no one launches a generation ship without that hope for the future. They want something better for generations in the future.
Yes.
But how do you know what those generations are going to think of you? I mean, we think about how people set things up, and maybe there's a lot of unfairness baked into all sorts of situations that people didn't even maybe recognize at the time they were set up, which is glaringly obvious later.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of what's hopeful might change over time. And I really wanted to dig into that with this. So it's sort of unique in that each of the four issues, you could really jump in because it's a different generation. Mm-hmm. They have different fears, hopes. There's a different revolution, a different romance.
Mm-hmm.
There's a through line, and some characters do go through, but you're jumping in time and seeing repercussions from one generation to the next, and how the fights that they fought for equality and to make things better how those play out and the unintended consequences.
And like you said, that each issue is going to be unique. It's because there's going to be like, they're going to each issue, like the second issue is going to be like a leap forward.
Yes.
And I have to say, that's one of the things I loved about issue one was it was a complete story, but yet I know it's part of a bigger story.
Yes.
But it was a very complete and sat. And the other thing I loved about the ending was satisfying.
Oh, thank you so much. I that means a lot to me, really.
Because so listeners, I'm trying to stay away from spoilers because let me just keep going through the questions and I'll tell you what else I love about it too. Okay, so now in issue number one, we meet Revela. Is that correct?
Revela, yeah, she's one of my favorite characters. Like once I got her in my head, I was like, oh, I can write this entire book, because if she's like the key, I feel, that opens the entire run of the story.
Yes. Oh, yes. And then also, too, we also meet Les, another main character in the book, too, as well. And if you can tell us, who is Les?
So Les is someone who on this, I hope I don't spoil anything too much by saying that there are very distinct castes, almost, mm-hmm. when we first meet these people. Like there is a worker class and there's pilot class, and mm-hmm. So much so that the people, it was passed down from when they got on the ship and their parents' parents. So there isn't a lot of overlap between them. They never would normally meet. So Les is a worker, mm-hmm. Revela is a pilot.
Yes.
And they unexpectedly meet. And as all good star-crossed love stories, you have to have some opposites attract, you know?
Yes. And the other thing I love about their relationship, it was organic. It just grew. That's the thing I love about their relationship.
Oh, yeah, I really wanted that to be the case. I wanted them to feel like distinct people who chose to have this relationship and that just really genuinely liked each other.
Mm-hmm. And then the generational ship, it's called the Dodana. Am I pronouncing it?
Yes.
And then what is the Dodana? I mean, we know it's a generational ship, but like I know there's a meaning behind the name to it as well too.
Yeah, it's a little bit obscure. I wanted to pick something that sounded very much like a ship and would sort of harken back to a great tradition of sailing ships. I mean, I love Star Trek, and they're always talking about the great, you know, sailing ships. And, you know, speaking of a hope-filled, yet problem-filled, they deal with all sorts of things on Star Trek. And I think my love of that show shows in this book. But they often reference, like, sailing ships of old. And a lot of that tradition is, at least in the West, goes back to the Greeks and that sort of thing. So Greeks and the Romans. And so that is actually just references somebody who was sort of an oracle.
Yes.
So I thought that it would be sort of like, oh, we're hoping for a better future and we are predicting that this is how well this will. But of course, you know, predictions never quite turn out the mm-hmm. way you hope they might. That things always change. So that's sort of what that reference is.
Oh, okay. All right. And then also too, the Dodana is also, there's like a governing body called the Council, right? So if you don't mind, I know they're briefly mentioned, they're briefly seen in the first issue.
Yes.
I want to make it clear to listeners that they're not the evil entity. They're just, we need to meet. This is how we kind of like run the ship, or how the ship needs to be maintained. So,
yeah, exactly. And you will see a lot more of how that changes and how the governance of this ship works over succeeding generations. But I figure anything needs to have some governing council. And it sounds good, right, to have a council, because you have one person, things can go wrong. Mm-hmm. You want to have a bunch of different people, but then who's on your council matters. And if you don't have a diversity of people, you have a paucity of ideas. And we see over the course of this book how that plays out.
Okay. All right. And now I know you mentioned in past interviews, but I'm just, for our listeners, like, you know, what were some of your inspirations for writing this story?
Yeah, you know, I love science fiction, and I love the fact that you can really get down into problems in the real world and how people relate to each other, and you can kind of distill it to its to all of the important parts of that, and the, you can really get the emotion out, even though science fiction is often thought of as a maybe less emotional genre than, say, horror, which is pure emotion. Mm-hmm. But I feel like in science fiction, a lot of times you can really get to the emotion between people by distilling down problems and really looking at them in a way that's outside of our world, and by putting people in a alien environment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of, you know, a draw from, of course, I always go back to Star Trek IV, The Journey Home. I love that. That movie so much, and also Star Trek II. I feel like there's a lot in both of those that even though people think of them as, oh, silly Star Trek, whatever, but there's a lot in there that, and also the Planet of the Apes books or movies, I think is a good example of how you can take a simple sci-fi idea and really get a huge amount of mileage out of it. So I thought a lot about those things, but I also read a lot of modern philosophy about how things would be different in space. So all of your problems of who controls what on Earth are problems, but in space, it's not just who controls jobs, it's who controls the air and who controls water and who controls, like, you could be exposed to vacuum and die in a second. And who make sure that doesn't happen. And so there's a lot of, it turns out there's been a ton written by people much smarter than me about how to achieve liberty in a space colony. And it's not easy, but it is achievable if people think about that ahead of time. And a lot of it is, it comes down to, you need art and you need science and you need philosophy and you need the humanities, and you need biologists. And it's again, that diversity. You don't need one person with a good idea. You need 10 people with different ideas, and they need to have arguments and come to the best ideas. So all of those things went into thinking about this this one four-issue miniseries. I spent a lot of years thinking about this before I actually wrote it.
And I'm going to say, because that is the perfect segue into my next questions. Because like you said, you're thinking about this story for years. Like, when did you start first thinking about this series, like, or this story? Like, was it 10 years ago? Was it when you're in, I'm not being sarcastic, but.
No, not at all. I've been batting around different iterations of how it would be best to tell a story on a generation ship for a long time. And then I had this idea for something similar to this way back when there was a movie about a generation ship that came out. I think it was called Passengers. Was that?
Now
I can't even. It was one that, it was a terrible flop, and it really put people off of generation ship stories for quite a while. And I kind of went, okay, I'll put that aside. I worked on some other things and developed a few other stories, but this kept tugging at me. And I really love the idea of these stories that are sort of told in the margins, not here, not there. You're on the journey. And I just really, I couldn't, it wouldn't let go of me. It wanted to be told. So,
because when I read this first issue, I loved it. And I know this, because it really shows through the dialogue, the storytelling. And we're going to get to Danny Luckard, his art, because
it's so good. It's so good.
But this first issue, it just shows how much love and passion. This is your passion project.
Yeah.
You really took the time. You thought out everything.
I hope so. I'm sure I've missed some things, but oh gosh, I tried.
No, because just how the flight suits. I'm trying not to, because I want to hold the question off talking about Danny and his artwork, but just seeing the flight suits, seeing the quarters, and like I mentioned to you in our email, is that just the details of just the keypad on Revla's but that's so detailed, because it could have just been, okay, we'll just make this block and people will know what. No, it's the attention to details. And again, just the dialogue, you really took time to do this. You took the time to think about it. So I'm just going to jump ahead, because I want to ask you one question about, so how did you team up with Boom Studios to get this passion project out?
You know, it's funny. Boom has always been very good to me, and I've worked with them on and off over the years on different projects. And I had it floating around, and I really just wanted to make this happen. So I pinged my editor, who had been with me on The Expanse. Mm-hmm. It turned out he was moving on to do some different stuff, but he really liked it, and he had some ideas to polish it up, which is so mm-hmm. good. And then he sent it on to the powers that be at Boom, and mm-hmm. they talked about it. It went through several, it's yes. never an easy process, but to find out what they really want to do, but they eventually gave me the green light, at which point I was assigned an absolutely amazing editor. Mm-hmm. And funny enough, I should mention her name. It's Sophie Phillips Roberts. Mm-hmm. She's been so good through all of this, just kind, patient, great ideas, constantly thinks of things that are like, oh, by the way, maybe even down to hairstyle, like,
yes.
Oh, perhaps we should make sure that this is a hairstyle that would be natural to this type of hair. Oh yeah, that would make sense. Thank you. She's doing research too. She loves cats. I love cats. So this was a natural project. But the group editor is actually Daphna Pleben, who I worked with as my editor way back when I was writing on Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was years and years and years ago. So it's been an absolute joy when we've had Zoom meetings and stuff, and we can all talk again. And she's always got fantastic ideas. So after it was clear that they wanted to make this book, it came time to find an artist. And we yes. went through several different choices. Mm-hmm. Danny's art is just so fantastic.
Yes.
And because I had brought them the project, they were like, okay, well, we either need an artist for hire or an artist to, who will share share in ownership. And of course, share ownership is way better, because mm-hmm. The artist has a much harder job, honestly, than I do. Like, they put mm-hmm. in so many more hours, and mm-hmm. they have to do tons of research and, mm-hmm. Yeah, so once Danny was on board, it just completely clicked, because he had these, he instinctually, like, I wanted it to be that the colors were a little different and would change a little bit each iteration.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, before I said anything to him, oh, I think the color scheme will change every issue. I was like, yes, exactly.
Yes.
So, mm-hmm. so yeah, he is the perfect choice. And plus, the way that he can actually make animals look expressive is... It's like a superpower, honestly. It's amazing.
Yes. And I'm going to come to that question when we get close to wrapping this up, because I want to talk about the cats and everything.
Oh, yes.
I want to ask this process question, because it's like, were your conversations with Danny very in-depth? Like, did he come up with like, okay, this is how I think the space suit should look like? Or did you come up with, can we have something like this and you guys just work it out? And were there like really in-depth discussions of, you know, how things are going to look, the vats of water and everything?
Yeah, it's funny. Usually when I'm working with an artist, the way, if I'm the sole writer, what I like to do is write sort of open-ended things.
Mm-hmm.
But because I figure, since I'm not an artist, usually whatever visual idea I have, they'll have a better one.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's something that for a plot reason really needs to be a certain way, like there are certain things like those vats,
mm-hmm.
that they need to be a certain thing because they have to accommodate a plot element. Often I'll put in a little like schematic or
mm-hmm.
a photo or something of something similar, mm-hmm. or if there's an animal that it needs to be this specific animal, or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I will write general descriptions. And then if the artist wants more from me, they'll ask. Mm-hmm. And often Danny will say, oh, should this be this or that? And earlier on, we had more discussions like, oh, I was thinking, like when we're designing characters,
mm-hmm.
this character should be more like this. No, this one should be a little taller. I pictured mm-hmm. them more like this. There was a lot more back and forth. But as we got going, I mean, he's operating on such a high level. And I mean, he's been doing this. He's got such a body of work. It's not like he needed me to tell him anything. Mm-hmm. So.
No, because, and listeners, I'm going to say throughout this interview, because Danny's work on issue, I can't wait to see what issue two brings, but issue one is.
I'll just give a hint. I'll say cat people will be very happy with issue one. Dog people are going to love issue two.
All right.
just, you know, so nobody feels left out.
Yeah. But just the amazing detail Danny puts in. He doesn't, now I'm not an artist or anything, but it shows he didn't skip on anything.
Oh, no.
Backgrounds were detailed. I mean, that cantina scene is, oh my God. Yeah, I've seen that in movies. Like it makes you feel like this is an actual place. This isn't some, you know, some made up science fiction hall where it sort of looks familiar. No, it's an actual place. Like,
yeah. And it doesn't look like any place else I've ever seen either, which is not easy to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's amazing. And just the details, especially on the flight suits.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
You know, it's amazing.
I all the time when I get art back, I'll be like, oh my gosh, I can't. It's so amazing that I just, you know, I'll screen capture a little piece on my phone and like just a single panel or something and just text it to a friend and say, I just have to share with somebody.
thank you for answering that question, because I was going to ask you, like, how was it to see pages or panels come in from him? It's like, holy cow.
Oh, it's like it's Christmas. I mean, honestly, it's so exciting to get the mm-hmm. pages back because, you know, I mean, you have to, as a writer, look at it and be like, okay, and check it and make sure, okay, is this all doing the story stuff? Because sometimes when he's working, maybe, he hasn't gotten like the complete end of the story. Like I have to put on that hat and make sure, okay, is it working back with my job as the making the plot and everything? But I had for this stuff, I had to take a minute first and just be like a fan and just be like, I can't believe I'm getting to see this first, you know?
And the other thing I want to comment, I'm sorry, I didn't get a chance to write this down. The other thing I love to comment was because the Dodonna, because, and I'm not going to spoil the scene, but there's a scene where it gives the impression that this is a big ship where Revla and Les are climbing. They have to climb up this ladder, and it's not just we just gotta go up to the next. It's like, it looks like there's like at least a few levels they have to get back to the top. And it gives that, I think it was like in 1 or 2 panels, but it gives a very good impression of this is a big ship.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted it to just feel like some place that you could imagine that actual generations of people would live mm-hmm. in and die and have babies and raise them and have their grandparents grow old, and that you mm-hmm. could imagine this could actually happen there. So yeah, I figure it's not small.
All right. And listeners, and Corina, you've already seen my notes, but you know, I love the first issue. The reasons are, you know, these are likable everyday characters. They're characters, you know, we've seen at workplaces. And as I mentioned to you before the interview, they're not the typical science fiction tropes, or oh, that's the space pirate, that's the, you know, that's the evil emperor or something. But these are everyday likable characters, working people. You know, the setting, even though it's in space and everything, the setting still looks familiar. You know, some of the cantina scenes, the vats, they don't, you know, it looks very familiar to me. Like we've talked about, or we already mentioned, that it feels very grounded in reality. As I mentioned, that everything is well thought out, you know, everything from the dialogue, you know, to the sets and everything. The other thing I love about this story, it's a slice of life story. You know, there are no villains, there's no dangerous aliens in the dark or anything.
No.
It's a great story. And as we, you know, as we mentioned, that it's a self-contained story, part of a larger story, and it flows natural.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. I really, that's such a huge compliment. Really. That's
no, but it, you know, because it took me a little while, because when I read it, I was going, it felt very satisfying, but I know I know it's going to continue on.
Yeah, but it's going to jump a bit. So, we will find out not even what happens exactly in these characters' lives, but it's going to jump and be their granddaughter.
Yes.
So that the main character in the next one, big jump. So.
All right. Now, all right. We've already hinted that there's a lot of cats in this issue. All right. You've already mentioned that dogs will appear in the next issue. Let me ask you this. Well, actually, let me ask you this, a fun question. Why do you have cats in the first issue?
Well, I mean, one reason is just, I always feel like in space, often everything in space stories is very, very sterile in that way. And I personally love life, and not just life, like my life. I love the idea that the Earth has spaceship Earth is full of life. And I know you in Hawaii, like I was in Hawaii in February on the Big Island. Amazing. And it's just teeming with life.
Yeah.
And the thing I saw there was a day gecko. I know they're not native, but the little green guys.
Yes. The gecko. Okay. Sorry.
That's why that's a little homage to my wonderful week in Hawaii. But yeah, just life appearing where you wouldn't think it was. And cats are very famous for always getting on ships, because of course any ship has rats. Mm-hmm. So there's, and I'm sure a generation ship, no matter how high tech it have food, you're going to end up with rats.
Yeah.
You better have some cats.
Yeah.
You know, so I figured it just kind of seemed natural to me that mm-hmm. maybe they didn't expect that, you know, cats are really good at having kittens too. So,
yeah.
You know, what do you end up with? A bunch of cats. And we'll see as things progress, what animals maybe came away from the Earth. It was animals that, because people wanted them or they were useful, sometimes mm-hmm. by accident.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there is a point in that first issue there where we find out how some animals got there. So,
yes. And then off the cuff question, I forgot to ask you this. Now correct me if I'm wrong. You have a cat, right?
I do.
What's your cat's name? I keep forgetting.
Vera. Her name is Vera. Yeah, you probably heard her early on. She always thinks when I open up Zoom, she thinks I'm talking to her. So she gives some meows.
But
she's named after famous, you know, old, it just sounds like an old movie star name. Vera, there's like Vera Miles. Yes. And so that's her. Yes, she's an inspiration. And I know that my editor Sophie also has cats, so I kind of put an extra cat in for Sophie, and then I was like, you know, where one or two cats is good, more is better. So
all right, let's see, I'm slowly wrapping things up. So what was the most fun or exciting thing that you enjoyed working on this book?
Oh gosh, you know, really, I love this world. Like when I started really thinking about it and digging into it, and I know you know that the Expanse, Battlestar Galactica, those are both things that also kind of work their way in here. But like Battlestar Galactica is an example of a very sterile universe in that, you don't see a lot of cats and dogs roaming around.
Right. Yeah.
It's mostly people.
Yes.
And I feel like that would be very lonely. To me personally, I would be lonely. I like to have my other life forms around. And so just building out a world that could encompass all that was what I really loved about this book.
That is so cool. That is, that is really, now I understand why Revla has a cat.
Yeah.
Because her space, her compartment, it's very nicely drawn. It is. Wow. But it's sterile. There's, yes, you know, you don't see like some type of a poster in the background, or right, you don't see like books. It's just the bunk bed, the walls, her little glass desk, and that's it. And the computer, and that's it. And that's why I love how our cat was just, you know, walking around on her desk.
I mean, I know during the long weeks of lockdown, back in, you know, it's not as long ago as it seems, I guess, when COVID was really rampant. But I would have been very sad to not have a cat in my small quarters at that point in time.
So, all right, I'm going to slowly wrap things up. You've mentioned that you are a Star Trek fan. The other thing I want to point out, I believe it's on your website, that you have a link about movies that you saw or you watched.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and of course, I saw Star Trek II on there. One of my favorite.
Oh, yes. Movies,
you know, that's, yes. And like, that is a very good movie. It's
one of my favorites, honestly. It never gets old for me.
I agree. I'm going to ask you, you know, I'm sorry, I'm going to slowly wrap things up, but, and I know these are off the cuff questions, but what did you love about, or what were some of the things that you loved about that movie, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan?
You know, it's really, a lot of it is about the plotting and how, I mean, again, kind of like you're saying about the space between, there's not really villains. There is. Khan is the obvious villain, but he's got a very, very good reason for feeling the way he feels.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah.
He really does. And he's, what he does is, from his point of view, I'm sure, is completely motivated. And if you are, you know, a Star Trek nerd like me, you remember those, you know, what, where he came from and all of that, and how he was portrayed before. And also, the performances are so much fun. Like, I don't know if you can have more fun watching a movie.
Oh, yes. It was one of those that it just worked on. It just clicked on all cylinders.
Oh, absolutely. The writing is smart, but fun. And it's smart in a way that makes you forget that it's smart. It never is showing all of its cards at once. Afterwards, you can go back and dissect the plot and go, that was way smarter than it was trying to make itself appear.
Yeah, yes. And also too, Nicholas Meyer, the director, was very good. Yeah.
Oh, so good. His pacing is like spot on, like the suspense and the action sequences, everything. Like I can't even, I'm sure somebody somewhere has something bad to say about that movie, but I don't.
No, me too. And I think, sorry, I'm kind of going off the cuff, but
I still love the
battle in the Mutara Nebula, because we've never seen the Enterprise do these curves, or they do the Z minus 10,000 meters.
Yes. It's always,
you always see them go straight. It's, and even the Star Trek, the motion picture, this ship is always going straight. You never see a turn. You never see, you know,
I feel like that was one of the things that the first time I saw that, I saw it in the theater. I was a little kid, but I remember just thinking, this feels like space.
Yes.
In space, there wouldn't be an up and a down. And I was like, oh, this actually feels like we're in space.
Yes. And I'm sorry, because I saw it in the theaters too. And I love it how in the Mutara Nebula, the Royal Alliance keeps going, trying to look for the Enterprise. And then the Enterprise, you just see the Enterprise just rise up behind us.
It was such a good moment.
I'm sorry.
No, I could talk about that all day.
Have you met and have you got any autographs from the original cast members?
Oh gosh, I wish I had, but no, sadly never. Although it's funny because living in LA, I've lived here for many, many years now. And I used to be in Studio City quite often. And I used to see this car that was a Toyota. Mm-hmm. And it was completely plastered with things saying how much they loved Leonard McCoy.
Yeah.
And it was just somebody who obviously just really, and it said, "We love you, Bones," like all over, and just said things all over it. And it was so funny. That's about the closest I've been. That's not close. It was close to somebody who loved him even more than me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've always been like, you know, three steps away. They're way over there somewhere and I never get close, but oh well.
This is an off the cuff question, and actually it's a fun question, but have you ever thought of going to the Star Trek convention in Las Vegas?
Oh gosh, I bet that's so much fun.
Yeah.
I have never gone, but I know that would be so much fun. Except I'd probably spend way too much money. So my big purchase at Comic-Con this year, I was on a bunch of panels and stuff at San Diego Comic-Con, and there was a anniversary keychain from the Wrath of Khan. That's the little ear bug. That was my big purchase.
So cool. So all right, next store signing or convention appearances for either sometime in November or early next year?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Actually, the day the book drops, The Space Between Number One is November 1st, yes. I believe, mm-hmm. is I will be at Collector's Paradise in North Hollywood, mm-hmm. which is actually very close to where I live, which thank you, North Hollywood Collector's Paradise, for having me. But I'll be there signing books and be really happy to have everybody come by and check it out.
Okay. All right. Any closing words to our listeners?
Oh, just thank you so much for supporting this book, and actually to you for supporting this book. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that people will pick this up, if nothing else, then just to see some of the beautiful covers we have, and for Danny's art, which is amazing.
Yes. So, Corina, thank you very much. Thank you very much for asking me to do this interview, to interview you, to promote this book.
Thank you so much for having me on. This was such a joy to talk to you.
Thank you very much. And I want to thank you for an advanced copy. I wish you all the success with your new series. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And if you are a new comic book fan or a lifelong comic book fan or a big science fiction fan, please check out The Space Between from Boom Studios. Now, the first issue comes out on November 1st. Second issue comes out on December 6th. Now, I love the first issue. To me, it's a story about hope. It shows how we overcome our differences for a better future. And like I've mentioned, this really feels like this is Corina's passion project. It's a story that it's a story she's always wanted to tell. The creative to her editors and, you know, and everybody on this book, especially Danny. It's the perfect mix. Danny's the perfect artist to bring her vision of her story to reality. Again, like I said, you know, I love this series.
Thank you so much. Yes. That really, it means so much to hear that.
And, you know, again, thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I want to thank Drew, the host of Comics for Fun and Profit, for putting this episode together.
Thank you, Drew.
Drew, thank you very much for all your hard work behind the scenes. And if you are a new listener, please check out new episodes of Comics for Fun and Profit that comes out every Saturday. And I want to thank you, the listeners. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you for listening to this episode. Until next time, guys. Aloha.
Aloha.
Check out beacons.ai/comicsfunprofit for all the C4 FAP links you could ever need. All in one place. You can provide feedback, listen, support, share, enjoy these. We have our Patreon there. You can buy us a beer or a coffee. You can check out our Instagrams, our Twitters, our Facebooks. Check out our YouTube page. You can email us. You can listen to our podcasts on Patreon, if you're a subscriber, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, on Podbean. We have Google Podcasts on there. We have an Amazon wish list. You want to buy Kyle and I something? Fine. You can do that here. We appreciate it. We have Kyle's RPG podcast listed on there, so you can check out his Dork Day Afternoon offerings. We have Cowabunga links, so you can check out the Cowabunga deep discount FOC and pre-order list. Get on that. That's RLCS, so you can check that out as well. And we want to just give you opportunities to say hi, to check out what we're doing, support us if you would like, or just listen. Check out beacons.ai/comicsfunprofit for all the C4 FAP links you could ever need.
As you know, RLCS is Cowabunga Comics, Lake Country, Wisconsin's best pop culture destination for new comics, back issues, gaming, retro video games, vinyl, and figures. Give them a call, 262-569-9999. Check them out online at cowabungacomics.com or follow them on Twitter at Incredical. They are our LCS, and we utilize their deep discount mail order service to bring Oconomowoc, Wisconsin closer to us. They'll take care of you. Tell them Drew and Kyle sent you. Say hi to Eric and James from us. If you need an LCS, you can't go wrong with Cowabunga Comics.